don't be afraid to show up as you are as well too. I just feel like a lot of people hide away, and I mean that could be for a multitude of things, but just don't be afraid to communicate and express, and don't be afraid to show up as who you are. It's just so important.
Hi guys, and welcome back to the Rachel J podcast. We're talking all things wellness and lifestyle to help you do life better. I'm your host, Rachel J. It has been so great seeing everyone tuning in each and every week to our episodes. We are so grateful for you. We know some of you have been listening to the podcast for a while, but you may not be subscribed. So if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. You'll get the episodes as soon as they drop, and it honestly does make such a difference. It will help us grow the podcast for you so we can have more inspiring conversations and learn more from our amazing guests. This week, I'm very excited to be sitting down with speaker, empowerment and mindset coach and author of Wild and Witchy. Welcome to the show, Alira Potter.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. Finally, we're doing this.
I know. I'm so excited. And I know we had scheduled it and there were a few things that came up, but I'm so excited to be sitting down with you to chat with you about all these awesome things that you've been doing. But before we start, because I really wanted to acknowledge this, I don't usually do this to be fair, which I think I've thought about since researching this episode to do with you, is the Welcome to Country.
I love this. Which
I know that some people do this on their podcast and I've definitely heard it. Oh. So I thought I would do it with you.
Yeah.
So I'll read it and then I'll chat to you about it. So
yeah.
I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we are meeting today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to the elders past, present and emerging.
I love this.
And I know that you are a proud Yorta Yorta woman. And for those of you listening, we have audience members that are listening from around the world who aren't Australian, but I wanted to know, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I love this because this is like, I guess, an educational sort of moment for a lot of people. But to clarify, the Welcome to Country, if you aren't a traditional land owner, we can't do a welcome. So what you've just done is what we call an acknowledgement of country. So you're acknowledging where Right. we're from, where we're placed, where we're doing our work. Obviously, you're in Melbourne. I'm in Geelong, so I'm on Wathaurong country. I think it's really cool that podcasts are especially doing this because it strikes up a conversation, but it makes me feel really proud. And it's like, awesome, people really want to learn and they really want to digest our culture, which is beautiful.
Yeah, and I feel like there is so much to learn still. I feel like so many of us, we have, I think, a vague understanding of our history as a nation, but we actually don't probably know very much. And who better to talk to than somebody who has Aboriginal heritage and is, you know, part of this country's just history, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit more about that in a little bit, but one of the things that I feel like is really powerful about your story is that you have experienced so much as a young woman, and one of those things is losing a parent at quite a young age, and you speak about this quite a lot. And so can you tell me a bit about that and what happened and how did you deal with the grief and the loss at such a young age?
Yeah, so I was 17 when my mum passed away from melanoma, so cancer. But I guess her last sort of years on earth, that's all that we knew of her. She was battling cancer for so long. She was in and out of hospital. She was really sick. And then, yeah, sadly, when I was 17, she passed away. I think the grief didn't really hit probably until my mid-20s. And obviously, when you lose someone, and a parent especially, you're just in like this sort of fog for like ages. And I was in like this fog for about a year where I thought she was here, but she's not here. And it was just, I couldn't sort of come to terms with the fact that she had gone. And so I think the grieving process, it really didn't start until my mid-20s, where I really had to go through the emotions of, you know, having lost a pet.
Yeah. And I feel like at that age as well, you don't know how to deal with it anyways, right?
And you have to, I mean, for me, I had to grow up so fast. My dad wasn't in the picture. It was just me and my sister. So I had to grow up overnight and figure out, okay, like what are you going to do? Where are you going to live? Who's going to look after you? Blah, blah, blah. Even though I was like just shy of turning 18, so becoming an adult, but still you're just like, oh, okay, like who's going to look after me? And I had to really grow up overnight and figure out, actually, you have to look after yourself. And this is how I became just so independent as well too, having lost a parent.
Yeah. And I feel like even at that 17, 18-year-old age, you're probably not – also, it wasn't, I mean, I don't know if you think at that age you are going to be completely on your own and have to look after yourself. And so you might not be fully equipped to be out in the world by yourself, really. And so you have to learn all those skills as you go through it, right?
Yeah. And I think that was the scariest part, is I really had to grow up overnight. I had to figure out how to be an adult. I didn't get to be a typical 18-year-old. I mean, I could, but I just had sort of responsibility on my plate, which kind of sucked. So I didn't really live out my 18-year-old life until my 20s, when I sort of started to figure out what I wanted to become and all that. But yeah, I was adulting at 17, 18.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't lose a parent, but I can relate to your story because my parents divorced when I was about 17. Mm. And so I basically moved out of home at that time and felt very much like you in that sense, where you had to literally figure out how to live in the world as an adult when you maybe didn't think that that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you don't think, oh, yeah, when I'm 17, I'm just going to be having to figure out life.
Exactly, yeah.
Right?
It's crazy. Yeah. You just have to, and I just wanted to be like, I just wanted to be a young adult and being like having fun, not having to worry about where I was going to live. Did I have to go get a job? All that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was tough, but I think that situation really helped shape me to be the person that I am today.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. And it was such a big thing. And you talked about the grief and the loss didn't really come around you didn't look at it till about mid-20s or in your 20s. And so tell me about that process that you went through of grieving, because I know we all can relate to losing someone or something and going through that process of grief. And some people find it difficult to look at that stuff because it's very painful sometimes, you know. So how was that for you? How did you go through that process? What did it look like?
So confronting, great. It is so confronting. It's so uncomfortable. So we generally push our emotions to the side and we're like, nope, I'm not dealing with this, or I'll deal with it at a later stage. And that's what I did. Unfortunately, I think for me, when I was in my mid-20s, I went through a really bad stage of drugs and alcohol abuse, and that was my outlet with dealing with the grief. And I didn't realize that until I literally had nothing and someone had to pick me up and be like, what's going on? Where is this stemming from? And I had to rebuild my life again, because I was like, oh, I'm actually processing and dealing with the grief right now, not only losing my mum, but I was also going through a separation with my partner then. So it was just all big emotions, lots of triggers, lots of trauma. So everyone is different in the way that they deal with their grief. But for me, I was unfortunately going down a really steep and narrow path where I had to confront that and be like, hey, this is not healthy. You have to like really look after yourself. And I had to start seeing a therapist, which was and is a really scary thing for a lot of people, because we don't want to sit in a room talking about our emotions. That was my sort of like, that was my thinking process. I don't want to sit there and tell them how I'm feeling. But when I started seeing a therapist, I was like, oh, this actually is making me feel a lot better. And it's making a lot of sense about why I'm acting like this and why I'm doing this. So yeah, the grieving at that point was really hard, but I'm still dealing with the grief every single day.
Yeah. It doesn't really go away necessarily, does it? It maybe lessens and you have better ways of dealing with it.
Yeah.
But like you were saying, just in terms of when everything was happening, I feel like a lot of the time that tends to happen, right? Yeah. Lots of things happen in your life where it forces you to look at this stuff that you've not been looking at.
Yeah, and it's so uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable. And but you've got to go through it and look at it. And it doesn't mean that you've got to do all at one go, but just to start to look into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, like what you said there, I mean, I feel like a lot of people too, we use different things to cope with those difficult emotions. Oh. And it can be a variety of different things. But what do you think happens if you don't deal with your emotions around loss and grief, if you just never look at it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can only sort of speak, I guess, on my lived experience around this. But I think for me, because I wasn't dealing with it, I was really projecting onto other people. I was projecting my trauma. I was projecting my triggers. I was using alcohol and drugs as an outlet to deal with my emotions. So if I didn't start seeing a therapist, I wouldn't be in this mindset of, I want to heal. I want to heal parts of myself. I want to become a better person, because when I wasn't dealing with that grief, I was a really shitty human being. And that's just my experience going through that grieving process. Everyone is different. But if I didn't deal with all that trauma and I'm still dealing with it, then I just wouldn't be that person I am now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so happy to hear that you have had a positive experience with seeing a therapist. I know there's a bit of a stigma around that, isn't it? And I think it's great that we can normalize it and just be like, if you need some help with your emotional or mental health, that it's completely, you know, that's being human. I mean, we all go through things like that.
Exactly.
Right? So get the help if you need it. Get the support if you need it.
Definitely.
Now, you also were married very young, at around 22, and you were married to a man. And,
I'm laughing. Yeah.
And you were divorced a few years later, and then you came out. Mm. So that would have been quite a transformative time for you, really figuring out who you are, what you want for your life, what you want for your relationships. Tell me about this journey of self-discovery and discovering yourself, and how did that all unfold?
Yeah, well, all that self-discovery and that transformational phase in my life was all around that time of dealing with the grief, the substance abuse, et cetera. So I was going through a divorce at that time as well too. I was married to a man at like 21, because that's what society made me think I needed to do. I needed to find a man. I needed to have babies, live in like this beautiful home, because that's what I thought I had to do. When in fact, I was actually really gay. And yeah, him and I just got to a point of, we both weren't happy. We both wanted really different things. And I just said, look, I just don't think there's any point in us going to see a counselor and fixing this. Let's just be honest in what we want and let's stay true to our values and things like that. So we separated and we wished each other nothing but the best. It was like a beautiful separation in that respect. And then, I guess when him and I separated, I just started exploring and I started just sort of like hanging out with women and being like, maybe I like men and women. And then I just came to a point where I was only dating women. And I just sort of said to my friends, I think I'm like gay. I think I'm a lesbian. I don't know. And my friends were super supportive and just said, look, don't label it. Just go with the flow. Just be attracted to that energy. And then, I've dated more women than I've dated men. And now I've met like the love of my life and we just got engaged. And in my head, I'm like, this is how it should be. This is the sort of love that I've always wanted, and it's with a woman.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an incredible story, and I feel like what a great journey of self-discovery to just allow yourself to explore as well. Sometimes I think we are told things by society and by our culture that we need to be a certain way, and a lot of people do get stuck in that and live a life that actually isn't theirs. It's someone else's. So I feel like it's so great to hear you come out of that and decide for yourself what you want for your life. You know, I think that's so courageous and so brave as well, because not everyone does that.
No, exactly. And I think that is sort of the advice that I've had conversations with friends over the years, to just sort of say, make sure that when you do step into a relationship, you are 100% happy. And if you're not happy in that relationship, voice it, because you just don't want to be in something for the sake of being in something. And that's what, unfortunately, what my marriage was. It was a beautiful time, but I just thought, that's what I'm supposed to do, marry a man and have babies, when in fact I wasn't really happy. Mm. It wasn't filling my cup and my heart.
Yeah. What would you suggest to people who might be going through something, either to do with their relationships or their identity or their sexual preferences. What would you suggest to them if they are having that fear of really looking into what is true for them and feeling comfortable enough or brave enough to be who they really are?
I personally think it is really good to have a really solid support network around you. I think if you have one person that you can really communicate with and say, this is how I'm feeling, I'm not too sure what to do, then they can sort of hold that space for you in that respect and give you the space that you need to express how you're feeling. But don't be afraid to show up as you are as well too. I just feel like a lot of people hide away, and I mean that could be for a multitude of things, but just don't be afraid to communicate and express, and don't be afraid to show up as who you are. It's just so important.
Yeah, I feel like it's such an important message, and I think that we're all learning that constantly every day to be more of who we actually are rather than what other people want us to be.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we touched on this at the start of the episode, and I really wanted to delve into this because I do think, like you said, it's actually a really great opportunity for us to learn more as Australians, but also anyone else listening around the world, because I think a lot of people don't really understand why we've got such a thing with Australian culture and history. And so I think this is a really good opportunity for you to speak as well to your experience of this. So I'm really interested to know if you can tell me your experience of growing up as a Yorta woman in Australia.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a loaded question. Yeah. So, like, for context, I'm a First Nations woman. My dad is Aboriginal. My mum was white Australian. And growing up, it wasn't challenging until I became a teenager. I was in high school that I sort of started noticing things, that I was the only black person at my school, because where we lived was a very white Anglo community. There was no culture in that school. There was nothing being taught. It was challenging because I did cop a little bit of racism, not to the extent of what my dad or grandparents have felt. And I think there is still challenging times now. Like, I'm a 33-year-old woman. And, for instance, my partner and I went and got petrol from the petrol station, and I was by myself in an aisle looking at stuff, and the attendant out of nowhere came and just sort of stood next to me. And I was like thinking, oh, she must be putting something away, or I don't know, she's unpacking something. She was checking on me to make sure that I wasn't stealing something.
Wow.
My partner, who's white, came and stood next to me, and the attendant just walked away. I was like, did that just happen? And this happens a lot, actually. And I think a lot of people just have this misconception of Aboriginal people and think that we all just, I don't know. It's the media that puts this, like, notion on us to think that we get everything for free and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, I've never gotten anything for free. I don't know what people are talking about. So it was really challenging growing up, but it's more challenging now because we still have to constantly educate people on particular things.
Yes. I noticed this, and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here, but there are so many things that I feel like we as an Australian society don't know, and it's almost like, we need to be educated, and there needs to be, which is why it's so awesome that you are doing the work that you do, because you have a voice and you can speak to your experience and educate people about what that experience is like, but also, you know, what it means to you to be Australian and be of First Nations heritage as well, because technically everyone else, no one was originated from this country, you know, and so there is a lot of controversy, I guess, or a lot of debate around it. But what would you like people to really learn and understand about you and the Aboriginal experience or Aboriginal culture that you think we should know?
I think don't be afraid to go and educate yourself on Aboriginal culture, because there's so much to learn. And I say to my friends, like, never be afraid to admit that you don't know enough, because that's where you can go to your local library and, like, get a book to read, or you can engage with elders in community, just things like that. So I just think, yeah, definitely walk with us, not ahead of us, when you're trying to be in our space and learn from us. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think, and I love that. And I think it's more coming to the conversation with curiosity and asking questions rather than, you know, having kind of like a preconceived idea about things. But, you know, we're never really going to understand how another person has experienced their life, and that goes for anybody. But I think the best way to create that compassionate and empathizing space and understanding spaces to ask questions, like you're saying.
Ask questions. Yeah, absolutely. Ask questions. And I think a lot of people think that racism just doesn't exist in our country, when it actually does. And that's the other thing too. I mean, I don't know if you follow Eddie Betts on social media, an ex-AFL footballer. He just posted a video where his kids were in their backyard of a Melbourne suburb.
No, I didn't see this.
A random person drove past yelling at three kids, probably all under the age of 15, yelling out and calling them the N-word.
Oh, and this video has
gone viral, because it's like, they just live in like a regular suburb in Melbourne and a car was driving past and yelling racist things at these poor children. And I think that video, as sad as that happened, it was a really good wake-up call for a lot of people to be like, wow, racism is still so prevalent in our country at the moment.
Yeah.
And if people don't think there is, then go and watch that video.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm astounded that that's happening, but also not that surprised in a way, because, you know, it's like, yeah, it does exist, and it's something that I think collectively as a nation, but also just society in general, we just need to be more conscious of it.
Correct. Yeah, that 100%.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I love about some of your work that you've done is that you've also partnered with the Butterfly Foundation at some point in championing the message of body positivity. Mm-hmm. And we're so about that on the podcast. We've actually had a couple of girls from the Butterfly Foundation. We had one of the psychologists, Nikki Isaacs, and Danny Rowlands, who's the, well, I don't know if she still is, but National Manager of Prevention Services. So I love this message. So what are your tips for people if they are trying to, or if they are comparing themselves or their lives to people they see on social media? Because I think this is a massive thing. People looking at photos, they're looking at people's bodies, they're looking at people's lives and going, why do I look like this and I don't look like that? What are your tips?
Oh, my gosh. My tips, honestly, if I'm being like absolutely vulnerable here right now, I still have days where I go on social media and I'm like, oh, my God, like, why don't I look like that? Or why isn't my bum looking like that? Like, I just, you compare. But I think the messaging is, don't be afraid to, when you do go on social media, unfollow people who make you feel crap about yourself, and follow people that will fill your cup when you're looking at social media and are giving you really good advice. I think that's the most important thing. Follow people who somewhat look like you as well too. Like, if that's a cultural thing, if it's a body type thing, that is probably that first step in sort of incorporating body positivity and body kindness as well too. But that's just like my advice, because what's the first thing we do when we wake up? We get on our phones and we're just like doom scrolling. So if you can curate your feed to make sure that you've got more positive content, then that will be the first step for you.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. How have you been able to maintain a positive relationship with your body? I know we all have moments of comparing, but generally speaking, I feel like you spread the message of body positivity. How are you able to maintain it?
It's, you know what, it's been such a journey to actually get to this sort of reframed mindset around understanding that my body is beautiful and understanding that I'm going to have negative days around my body as well too. I think I maintain it by surrounding myself with positive people who don't speak negative about their body as well too. I've got a partner who is just so like loves herself as well too. So that helps a lot. But it's definitely taken a very long time to get to this point. It is challenging though.
Mm. It's like a practice, right? You've got to practice it every day. And it's not all going to be perfect, is it?
Exactly. It's like those positive affirmations, like being kind to your body, all of those things. But yeah, it's hard. It's really hard.
Mm. I love just even you talk about affirmations there and just saying those positive statements to yourself, right? That's what affirmations are, right?
Yeah.
So this kind of ties in really well because your book, Wild and Witchy, is all about self-love and manifesting and spiritual sassiness. So I really love that term, spiritual sassiness. I don't think I've ever heard it framed that way before. But how do we become spiritually sassy?
Oh, I love this. So obviously go and get my book, Wild and Witchy. But
yes.
I don't know, when it comes to spirituality, I think there's like a lot of people think you have to be super woo-woo to step into the space, when in reality you don't need to be. It can be as simple as going and getting a deck of cards or buying crystals for the first time, following people on social media who can educate you around like what spirituality is and how to tap into your intuition. So I think like I'm very spiritual. I'm spiritual to the point where I do witchcraft every now and then on, you know, if there's a certain moon, I'm like, oh, I'll do some like little magic here and there. But then the other side of me is where I'm spiritual in the sense of just listening to my intuition every day, tuning into that. And I'll meditate, like those nice soft things. So I think for anyone wanting to tap into spirituality, don't think that you need to be a full-blown witch and know everything. You can literally start off by understanding what your intuition is and how to unlock it.
Yeah, I love that. And it's almost like not putting yourself in a one bucket as being like it has to look this way, but exploring different things that you can do to tap into that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right.
So your intuition, I love this because I'm a big fan of intuition and talking about it. And I know that sometimes people find it really hard to discern the difference between the intuition or our intuition and our mind because it's quite a different thing. And I've always felt like our intuition, especially as a woman, is a big superpower. And so what is your suggestion for people who maybe struggling to even know the difference between their intuition and their mind just thinking something?
Yeah. When you come into a situation where you feel like you want to be guided on your intuition, make sure that you go slow. I think we automatically go, is that my intuition trying to give me a little nudge? It's just like, let's just dial it back a little bit and just take a breath. For me, it's like a physical thing. I will feel it in my body and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's my intuition giving me the green light, or it's my intuition telling me that that person's not a very kind-hearted person. So I think go slow and listen to your intuition because sometimes our anxiety and our mind can sort of just jump the gun. But that's just a protection thing. That's just the ego being like, I'm trying to protect you right now. Like, don't listen to your intuition. So just slow down and just take a breath and tune in to how you're actually feeling.
So it's more of a sense, isn't it? I've always felt like it's more sense, of a sense. Yeah.
And a trust thing as well too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. I feel like I saw this recently somewhere. It must have been on a video or something. But that I think a lot of us know the sense of our intuition. But the problem is that we don't trust it and act on it. It's almost like we question our intuition and think, oh, is that really it? Is that what you're trying to say? And so almost like developing that trust of it rather than, I feel like we all know what it feels like to have that gut feeling or that sense when something is or isn't right for us, right?
Completely. Yeah. It's a big trust thing and you sort of just have to let your guard down and just trust that this could be your intuition trying to tell you something.
Mm. The other thing you talk about a lot is manifesting, which I love as well. And talk about how we can bring in our most abundant life ever. So what are your top tips, top tools and techniques for manifesting?
Yeah, I mean, it's so saturated on social media at the moment that I think it confuses people about you needing all these tools and shit for manifesting. And I'm like, no, don't. Like, it's as simple as literally getting your iPhone and putting in your notepad, I am allowing a certain job to come in a certain career, a certain like love, whatever it may be, money. But I think my tips are put anything out to the universe. Don't expect it to come to you straight away. Trust in the process. And yeah, I think that my sort of baseline top tips around manifesting is just essentially putting it out to the universe, knowing that it's coming to you. Doing a little bit of work to actually get that manifestation is really going to help as well by bringing that abundance in as well too. But yeah, I mean, like I said, we could do a whole episode on manifesting it, but that's sort of like the baseline of doing it.
Yeah. Oh, we should do a whole episode on manifestation. I feel like there are. That'd be really fun to do, actually.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. Okay, let's put that on the calendar. Now, I've got the final three questions for you, Alira.
Yeah.
All right, so what drives you?
So the thing that drives me, and it may sound really like cliche and boring, but like life, just being here, drives me to do things and just to be the best version of myself. Because at one point in my life, I didn't think I was going to be here because I was just running down such a really bad path. So life is just the biggest driver to be like, yes, just go for it. What's the worst that's going to happen?
Oh, I love that. That's so expansive when you say that, which is yeah. So cool. Love it. So if there was one most impactful thing you could tell your younger self, what would that be?
I think it would be stop worrying about what you look like, that you're beautiful. I think I worried about too much of what I looked like. And I remember just being on like a diet when I was like 15, trying to be skinny. And I think just that advice of like, just love yourself, please stop trying to change.
Yeah. Oh, I like that so much. So good for your self-love, right? Giving yourself that self-love. Yeah. Love that. And my final question for you is, what is the biggest lesson you have learned in your life so far?
Biggest lesson? I think I don't like live with regret or anything like that, but I think there's probably been moments in my life where I've just, you need to just step up. But I think, I don't think there's any particular lessons at the moment where I can think of.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I mean, life kind of gives you what you need. And then it's how you respond to it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can just learn from those mistakes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. I like that. Amazing. Well, I have so loved chatting to you. I feel like we could chat for so long. And like we said, we could probably do a whole episode on manifestation. Thanks. We might have to get Alira back to do another episode on just manifestation, which would be amazing. So what we're going to do is we're going to pop up all of Alira's links to her socials, to her website, where you can get her book, Wild and Witchy, which you can get. So we'll pop them up. So make sure you guys check it out. Tell us what you loved and learned from this episode by leaving a rating and review over at Apple Podcasts. Screenshot this, tag us, and share it to your socials. Thank you again, Alira, for joining me on the show. And thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time on the Rachel J Podcast.